strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out.
This is the Quality News Network. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down more than 50 points. We'll have the closing numbers coming up in our business segment. A congressional report on the progress in Iraq finds that at least 13 of the 18 benchmarks to judge the Iraqi government's performance have not been met. The Pentagon is asking for a revision of the Government Accountability Office's assessment. A panel released its investigative report today on the Virginia Tech massacre in which 31 people were killed by a student gunman. It found that if the university had responded faster to warn students that the killer was on the loose, lives could have been saved. Virginia's Governor Tim Kaine said, quote, "the system failed" in response to the communication problems that occurred that day. The United Nations Nuclear Agency says that Iran is expanding its uranium enrichment program, but is producing less nuclear fuel. U.S. officials insist that Iran's nuclear program is for the production of weapons, not for civilian purposes. Near the United Nations headquarters today, chemicals were found in a UN office. The material, which is identified as a chemical warfare agent, was removed by a hazmat team. It is believed to have been taken from Iraq's main chemical weapons facility more than a decade ago. The last of the South Korean hostages being held by the Taliban in Afghanistan have been released today. The Christian missionaries were handed over to Red Cross officials. They were part of a group of 23 who were kidnapped on July 19th in eastern Afghanistan. Two of the kidnapped victims were executed. The Afghan Defense Ministry reports that in a southern province, a wanted Taliban insurgent leader has been killed in a U.S.-led raid. Idaho Republican Senator Larry Craig is becoming more isolated from the GOP after his recent arrest in an airport bathroom. Another Republican Senator, John Ensign of Nevada, has suggested that Craig resign. The Idaho Senator has already lost his senior committee positions in the Senate. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign will give $23,000 to charity. The money was received from a donor who has an arrest warrant for fraud. Former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson is expected to announce his 2008 Republican presidential bid on Thursday. There has been much speculation. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The finance ministry in Greece has put a $1.6 billion cost on the recent wildfires. At least 64 people were killed in the fires, which had burned for a week. In California, high temperatures have caused near-record demand for electricity across the state Wednesday. A Stage 1 emergency was called by the state's electric grid manager. Phoenix has set a new record this year of 29 days of temperatures at 110 degrees or higher. Toys R Us is recalling 27,000 Chinese-made Imaginarium wooden coloring cases, which hold crayon and paint sets because the box contains lead. China replaced its finance minister today amidst reports he was involved in a sex scandal. The move comes weeks before a significant Communist Party meeting to set the country's economic policies. The U.S. economy grew at a 4% rate in the April to June quarter, according to the Commerce Department. That growth is higher than the initial government estimates. Sony has introduced a video player version of its Sony Walkman. It is seen as a rival to the iPod media player. Gold is trading at $673.90 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.36 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 51 points, the Nasdaq up 2, the S&P 500 down 6. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour. Oh, I'm off to a roaring start tonight, aren't I?
But I can't get the time right.
6 minutes after the hour, and I'm only looking straight at the clock. I got to kind of aim through the mic boom stand thing. One of these days when we do video, you'll understand all of this. But then again, who wants to see me and Agnes sitting here naked all the time anyway? Right? Right. Welcome. We've made it to Thursday, and we've got some leftover stuff from prayer meeting last night, as well as some fresh information. Fresh Republican silliness, fresh Republican hatefulness, fresh, just fresh. And off the bat, I don't know if it's going to happen yet, but I'll go ahead and mention it now in case it does. I'm hoping that we might have our good friend Greg Pallast on to discuss Katrina 2 years on this evening, or possibly tomorrow evening. I'm expecting a call back just any time now to let Agnes know whether or not that's going to go down. You know, we'll advise you. We're hoping it's going to happen in the second hour of the program. No real way. You know, this is radio on the fly, so it's kind of hard to know. You know. I hate that phrase. You know. But that's part of the plan. And now, speaking of friends of the program. Another friend of the program is a gentleman by the name of Chris Floyd, who has done website Empire Burlesque. He's an excellent writer. I don't know if he's still expatriated in England or not, but he has. And this was this column was sent to me from Empire Burlesque. At chris-floyd.com. Chris, just like normal. Floyd, just like normal, with a hyphen in the middle, .com. chris-floyd.com. An entry by the name of TikTok, countdown to midnight in Persia. Chris writes, day after day, almost hour by hour, fresh confirmation comes of the impending attack on Iran. Yet the same surreal malaise that hung over public affairs before the war of aggression against Iraq has descended again. Everyone knows the war is coming, and nothing will stop it. But the strange, ludicrous shadow play of sham debate goes on, as if there were some kind of political or diplomatic maneuver out there that could deflect the Bush-Cheney junta from its long-chosen course. But nothing will stop them, just as nothing, not even 10 million people in the streets around the world, the largest protest in human history, stop them from the rape of Iraq. It's what they want to do, and they will do it. And that is as sobering a paragraph of English language as I have lately read. What was that phrase? The same surreal malaise that hung over public affairs before the war against Iraq. Do you feel that? Can you feel it just laying on you? It's like the oppressive heat that so many of us have been living through lately, isn't it? You walk outside and the sun feels like a hammer and your shoulders feel like an anvil. And that's what knowing this war is coming with Iran feels like. You got the run-up in the American Legion speech the other day. We cannot let Iran cause another nuclear holocaust. Memo to George. The only nuclear holocaust that have ever been caused on planet Earth were caused by the United States, buddy. One at Nagasaki, one at Hiroshima. There are museums. You should visit them. We will not allow Iran to cause a nuclear holocaust. There is not one shred of evidence that Iran is anywhere near developing a nuclear weapon. There's even less evidence that Iran wants to develop a nuclear weapon. They've openly stated that they do not desire, they do not seek a nuclear weapon. But that doesn't matter. There sits Pakistan on top of a nuclear arsenal. We're not talking about bombing them, at least George Bush isn't. There sits India. George Bush is trading them the nuclear technology for mangoes. Yeah, really. I mean, I don't make this stuff up. And there's Israel. Israel, sitting on top of a nuclear powder keg, non-signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, just as India is non-signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. You know, what's the greatest threat in the Middle East? What's the greatest nuclear threat in the Middle East? It has to be Israel, because they're the only ones that have them. But we're going to bomb the snot out of little girls and little boys and guys who sell roses on the corner of Boulevard in Tehran. We're going to destroy their ability to have clean drinking water. We're going to eliminate their electrical grid. Yeah, this is all in the Chris Floyd column as well. According to he cites a story by a study by Dr. Dan Plesh, director of the Center for International Studies and Diplomacy of the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London, and Martin Butcher, former director of the British American Security Information Council. Man, what a mouthful. But he quotes them and their report that says the goal of the attack on Iran, you know, for any of you who are foolish enough to think that it will just be some sort of little surgical strike, the goal, they say, is to, quote, destroy Iran's WMD capabilities, nuclear energy, regime, armed forces, state apparatus, and economic infrastructure within days, if not hours, of President George W. Bush giving the order. Any attack is likely to be on a massive, multi-front scale, but avoiding a ground invasion. Attacks focused on WMD facilities would leave Iran too many retaliatory options, leave President Bush open to the charge of using too little force, and leave the regime intact. U.S. bombers and long-range missiles are ready today to destroy 10,000 targets in Iran in a few hours. U.S. ground, air, and marine forces already in the Gulf, Iraq, and Afghanistan can devastate Iranian forces, the regime, and the state at short notice. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Will you weep when it happens? Will you cry? Will you cry for what has become of what a nation that had once been an engine for peace? Will you feel deep and abiding sadness for the civilians who will die when Dick Cheney orders their execution? Will you? It matters little whether they kneel on a rug to pray toward Mecca, or worship Zoroaster, or the divine fire, or Ahura Mazda, or whether they worship Christ Jesus, or the Buddha, or any other imaginary being. It matters little. They have chromosome pairs that are identical to yours, different only in the way the genes they're on are arranged. And babies, and children, and elderly people who have survived all manner of the challenges that is offered by that are offered by life, they will die. They will die in their hundreds. They will die in their thousands, and perhaps even, yea, verily, in their hundreds of thousands, on the whim of a man who was never even elected in the first place. And it will happen. Conventional wisdom now is that the rollout for this war will be the same as the rollout for the Iraq war, because these people, being conservatives and Republicans, have about as much creativity to them as a bag of sphagnum peat moss. They'll do it the same way they did it before. You know that. I know that. It will be slaughter, pure and simple. And of course, American media will not show you the fathers lifting the tattered corpses of their little boys and little girls out of the rubble. They will not show that, the American media. And America will swing again into a brand new war frenzy, just as we do at the beginning of every war, only to experience buyer's remorse some months later. It will be a slaughter. And we don't know what the slaughter may come home to us. You know, we're constantly told that America is just a Swiss cheese of terrorist cells, ready to be activated at a moment's notice. Oh, they're there, they're here, they're everywhere. That guy driving the semi who has the turban wrapped around his head, he might be a terrorist, or a Mexican terrorist, ready to do the bidding of Osama bin Laden at the drop of a hat. Why would you want to incite those terrorist cells to go active by attacking a country that has not lifted a finger against you? Oh, but Bob, they're making the IEDs, and they're giving them to the Shias, and they're using them against us in Iraq. Casus belli. Casus belli. We're screwed. We are well and truly screwed. And, you know, the Labor Day holiday is coming, not this weekend, but the next? Is it this weekend, Labor Day? See, it all runs together for me after a while. But after Labor Day, the ramp-up will come. And, you know, the thing that's going to be most distressing, the thing that is going to be most disturbing, is going to be watching the Democrats knuckle under and watching Democratic presidential candidates stand up and say, well, Iran really can't be allowed to develop nuclear. It's going to be really disgusting. So I'm just kind of getting myself ready. I'm getting in the mindset for it. But I've got to tell you, I differ with Chris Floyd in this article in one regard. He says, nothing will stop them. Everyone knows the war is coming and nothing will stop it, he says. But the strange, ludicrous shadow play of sham debate goes on. I disagree. There is one thing that can stop this war. There is one thing that can make this war not happen. And you and I both know what it is. We know full well. H.R. 333, is it? Is that the impeachment of Dick Cheney? Begin impeachment proceedings, and they will not be able to do this. Begin impeachment proceedings, and they will know that we are in earnest when we say this war must not happen. Begin impeachment proceedings, and they will be entirely too tied up to start any mischief. What do you think? Do you disagree? Do you agree? Share your thoughts either way. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Are you ready to be tuned in to whatever source you use for your video news and watch the night light up around Tehran as it did around Baghdad and hear the breathless reporters talking about shock and awe? Are you? You have one chance. One chance and one chance only. They want to ramp up a war, you'd better ramp up your demands for impeachment from your elected representatives. This is fast becoming a matter of life and death. Literally. I saw some pictures of Tehran not too long back. It is a beautiful place. It is a beautiful place, much as where you live is a beautiful place, much as where I live is a beautiful place. Because beautiful places are made beautiful in large part by the people who inhabit them. It's not the street corner. It's the flower cart on the street corner. It's not the springtime park. It's the children frolicking in the springtime park. It is not the boulevard, but the mother pushing a stroller down that boulevard. It is not the buildings, but the people in them. And it is all slated for slaughter if it is inside the territorial confines of Iran. You are witness to the conspiracy to commit murder. Now, in American jurisprudence, being party to a conspiracy to commit murder before that murder can happen and failing to do something about it makes you an accessory before the fact, and makes you, in fact, as culpable as the murderer himself. You have a chance, putting your voices with those of others, to stop this murderer. Will you do it? Will you? Can you? Do you have the energy in you for it? Is it possible? Phone calls every day to every elected representative from the dog catcher on up saying, I expect you to do your job and stop this. To your members of the House of Representatives, whether they're from your district or some other, demanding that impeachment proceedings be begun so as to stop the slaughter of Iran. Because this is going to be a slaughter. This isn't smart bombs and laser-guided weapons. We found out a long time ago that those things are overhyped, and they kill civilians just as well as any other weapon. There lies your choice. Will you be an accessory before the fact to murder, knowing the nature of the conspiracy to commit murder that is in its planning stages? Will you sit quietly as the plan for the murder goes forward? Will you? Or would you rather talk about a pervy Idaho senator who played hand jive and footsie in a restroom in Minnesota? Which is more important? You choose. You choose now. And the choice that you make will affect the way you view your life for the rest of your days. Will you be an accessory to murder? Will you sit back and chuckle and giggle about the all too common hypocritical affairs of a dirty little senator, a dirty little Republican from Idaho? Or will you get busy and act to stop murder? I don't know how the choice could be made more clear or more stark. Maybe if we got the Tehran phone book and started reading names, understanding that every name we read was a name for whom a death warrant has been signed in Washington, D.C. by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Perhaps if we could get a hold of the Tehran newspaper and read the birth announcements, maybe then we would all understand that every one of those babies has a price on its head set out by George W. Bush. I'm trying to figure out some way to take away the abstract idea, the abstraction in the idea of war with Iran. School has just started here in the mountains, and in other parts of the country as well, I'm sure. Around noon, you can drive by, and there are children playing on pieces of playground equipment. Look at them as you drive by if you're out. Mentally transpose them to Iran and understand the plans that George W. Bush has for them. Understand that if, in fact, all of these terrorist cells, you know, they walk among us, are real and not a bunch of bogus crap. Understand that when the bombs start falling on Iran, that those terror cells will go active here. Because at that point in time, if Iran has terror cells here, as we are told that they do, but probably don't, just like they don't have a nuclear weapons program, oh, it's going to be a merry time in the United States, and your civil liberties are going to go down the toilet. There are more things tied to the likelihood of this attack on Iran, this murder of Iran, this rape of the Iranian people, than we can even begin to fathom. What will you do? What is your job as a patriot, as an American, as someone who loves this country as dear as life itself? What is your job? And that is the inquiry with which we begin this program. Want to talk about it? Or does it just make the words freeze in your throat and a pit form in the hollow of your stomach? You know the number, 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music. Billy Shears.
Join us this Saturday at 9 p.m. to midnight for Night Sounds. We'll feature some brand new music, and this week's special segments will include music of the 80s, one-hit wonders, and a new segment with some great smooth jazz selections. And of course, Erica Richards will be on hand for Night Sounds dedications. You can direct your dedication request to Erica Richards at BillyShearsMusic.com. Be there this Saturday night at 9 p.m. right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Sit down, Waldo.
25 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. I don't think that's quite the image I had in mind when I was talking about children in schoolyards, Agnes. You're twisted, dear. But you look so cute in that Hot for Teacher bikini. What are we going to do? What? Yeah, I know. Let's see. I was just reminded by one of the folks in the chat room that there is a story circulating that a National Guard unit, a full unit from the National Guard, I believe Florida, I don't have the story in front of me. Somebody could, if you wouldn't mind, oblige me by sending the story along. I don't do web searches on the fly very well during the show. But is being posted to Washington, D.C. for an entire year. And the only question you can ask is, and I don't think it's unreasonable, why? Why would we need to do that? What kind of unit is it? Why are they being taken from their families, from the loving arms of their children, their wives, their husbands, mothers, grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles, nieces, friends, to do a year in Washington, D.C.? Why? Why are they being, if it is indeed Florida, why are they being pulled from Florida in the heart and soul of hurricane season when they may well be desperately needed at any time? Isn't there another one boiling out there somewhere between South America and Africa, even as we speak? Now that the water's got nice and hot, and the currents slam together and form that astonishing rotation? Why? Why? And, of course, if you're wondering why, you might do well to pay attention to some of the little individual stories that are taking place. Do you remember, what was it, 3-4 weeks ago? It all runs together for me after a while. Everything is 3 or 4 weeks ago now. Even if it was yesterday. It's like being down south and ordering a Coke. Well, what kind? Orange, grape, Dr. Pepper? You know, because it's all Coke. Everything's 3 or 4 weeks ago now. We had a story, and we even had the audio. You remember this, Agnes? Of the family, the man and his wife, in Asheville, North Carolina, where the sheriff's deputy was battering down their house, battering down their door because of alleged flag desecration. You remember that? Asheville, North Carolina. Well, we've got another Asheville story. I don't think it's the same people this time. Just another brave pair of patriots. In this case, it's Jonas and Kendra Phillips, who have grown sick and tired of watching the criminal thugs who inhabit the White House and the executive branch of government. So they did what they thought they should, and what the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America guarantees them the right to do. They got out a big piece of cardboard, and they wrote three words on it. Impeach Bush Cheney is what they wrote. Jesus, am I beginning to sound like Paul Harvey? Somebody stop me before I say, page two. No, they made a cardboard sign that says, Impeach Bush Cheney. So they take their little sign, and they go out onto the sidewalk of the Haywood Road Bridge over I-240 in Asheville, North Carolina. They did it several times this summer. And Kendra was standing on the bridge about 4 o'clock at the beginning of this month when she was approached by a police officer. She asked him whether she was doing something wrong, and he said no, but they'd gotten a complaint from one person who called in 4 times. That's a Bush voter, okay? Bush voters, as you, it's easy to find out. You know, I've got, like I said, I've got a little right wing stalker now. And they won't engage in direct dialogue, debate, discussion. They scream a lot. That's their response to any rational attempt to discuss policy in this country. So, you know, some wingnut had called in 4 times to the cops about her impeach Bush Cheney sign. So, Jonas Phillips, he would go and hold the sign up in the mornings on the way to work about 7:30. He'd go for about 20 minutes to the bridge, which is near where he works. And he'd been at the bridge for about 15 minutes, because see, the interstate passes underneath it, so you can, you know, hold the sign up, kind of like the freeway blogger does. You've probably seen his work around the internet. August 15th, he'd been there for about 10 or 15 minutes. A police car pulls up and parks behind him, and Officer Russell Crisp asks him for his ID, and Phillips says he obliged. Fact of the matter is, Officer Crisp should have had no legal right to ask him for that ID. Officer Russell Crisp asked him how long he planned to be there, and Mr. Phillips said about 5 minutes more, since he had to be at work about 8. Mr. Phillips said, "Am I doing anything wrong?" Officer Crisp says he's waiting for a sergeant to arrive. 2 minutes later, Sergeant Randy Riddle. Jesus, where do they get these names? Asheville, North Carolina. Sergeant Charlie Cornpone. No, Randy Riddle showed up. First thing he says is, "Put down the sign, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest." Jesus. So Jonas Phillips asks him, you know, why? Get the children out of the room. I don't want any complaints or anything like that. This is journalism. This is a quote of the pretty mouth of Sergeant Randy Riddle of the Asheville, North Carolina Police Department. Agnes, I don't want you jumping out of your skin over this, okay? The first words out of his mouth were, "Put down the sign, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest." Phillips says, "Why?" And Sergeant Randy Riddle of the Asheville, North Carolina Police Department says, "I'm sick of this shit. You're going to get your 15 minutes of fame now, buddy." So he says, "Why?" again, and Sergeant Riddle says, "You're obstructing the sidewalk." He turns to the other policeman and he says, "Officer Crisp, you just saw a man walk by me with no problem, no luck." And at that point, Sergeant Randy Riddle, big tough man, protector of the homeland, is shoving his nameplate in Phillips' face, saying, "That's right, Sergeant Riddle, buddy, get it right." So they took him downtown to the police station in Asheville. They booked him. You know, criminal possession of sign. Obstructing the sidewalk. No one ever reads him his rights. And they question him several times about "What are you affiliated with any groups? We need to know any groups you're a member of. You member of Veterans for Peace?" Jonas Phillips says, "No. It's me and my wife, and we're thinking it's our patriotic duty to do this. I'm not a member of any group." Police Chief William Hogan said, and this is from the Progressive, an inquiry by Matt Rothschild. You've heard his stuff on the network before. Responded to Matt Rothschild by saying, "We want citizens to be able to protest and exercise their freedom of speech. What is important for everyone to understand is that in exercising this right, you cannot endanger the public or infringe upon the rights of others. The Asheville Police Department is a professional, well-trained, and accredited agency that's committed to protecting individuals' constitutional rights. Our department has assisted with untold rallies and protests to protect citizens' opportunity for free speech while maintaining safety of all individuals present. In this case, the actions of Mr. Phillips were impeding the flow of traffic and endangering motorists by holding a sign over Interstate 240 during rush hour traffic, which could have caused serious traffic crash. It is unfortunate that this event and the motives of the officers have been misconstrued to represent an act by the Asheville Police Department to deprive some of their constitutional rights." That business about impeding the flow of traffic, that's because Mr. Phillips crossed the street with his sign.
Uh-huh.
But there wasn't any traffic there. "The department has received multiple complaints over a 2-week period last month about individuals holding up sign at that same spot." That's the press release from the Asheville Police Department. And they also said they're considering charging Mr. Phillips under a different North Carolina law that prohibits hanging signs on an overpass. And the proof, they say, that he was making a nuisance or making a dangerous situation is that people were seeing his sign as they drove underneath him on I-240, and they were honking. In other words, they were manifesting their support for impeaching George Bush and Dick Cheney. Welcome to America. Welcome, welcome, welcome. No. Welcome to Bush-merica. Welcome to Dick-merica, in either instance spelled with 3 K's. I got a photograph, you know, when I see this kind of stuff, it makes me a little bit crazy. I got a photograph earlier today, and talking about photographs on the radio is, of course, dancing about architecture. We all understand that now. I got a photograph of Larry Craig and John Ashcroft and, oh God, I don't have it in front of me now. I forget who the other right-wing goober-headed freak was. But they're all wearing American flag neckties and American flag suspenders and other American flag clothing paraphernalia. The correspondent said, "Am I the only one left who still gets pissed off when I see this kind of stuff? Whatever happened to flag etiquette?" Now, mind you, every election year, some right-wing, goober-headed freak will go before the VFW and the American Legion, and they will tell, "We need a flag desecration amendment." And yet, at the same time, they'll probably be standing there with an American flag necktie and American flag suspenders and maybe an American flag hanky. And, just as was the case with Larry Craig's mugshot, probably wearing an American flag lapel pin. And, of course, that was the nature of the charge against the man and his wife in Asheville, North Carolina, when the sheriff's deputy beat down the door. Desecration of the flag. And yet Republicans show up for political rallies, crass political rallies, literally decked out in the flag, and somehow that's not desecration. On the other hand, a man with a hand-lettered homemade cardboard sign that says, "Impeach Bush Cheney," well, That is, let's see. That is creating a public disturbance. And that is creating a public danger. And that is impeding the flow of traffic. You know, you got to wonder about Sergeant Randy Riddle. All of these people, I'm sorry, this is just the disconnect that is my life and is my world. How does Sergeant Randy Riddle stand to look in the mirror when he gets home at night? I don't know. It simply astonishes me. Blows me away. That you could... I mean, look at this. Look at this line. I'm sick of this shit. You're going to get your 15 minutes of fame now, buddy. You're under arrest. Meanwhile, this unit from the National Guard is going to be billeted in Washington, D.C. for a year. Why Washington, D.C.? Are they afraid of the protesters? So we're getting ready to attack Iran. Free speech is being trampled around the country. What's the right wing worried about? Why, I've got one of their little press releases right here in front of me. Subject line: Bush missing deadline for border fence. Interview opportunity: Bush administration still missing deadline for promised first 70 miles of physical border. Oh my God, the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps. They're challenging the Bush administration because they haven't built the fence yet. We need a fence. We got to have a fence. Lord God in heaven. I mean, is this a case of you know, the closing the barn door after the horses are gone? Okay, let's go to the phones. Susan has some information for us. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How
I
are
just
you?
Thought you would. You're gonna love this. Would you and the reader and listeners like the email address of the Asheville, North Carolina Police Department?
Why, sure, certainly, of course. And I know that everyone who writes to inquire about this fascist thug, Sergeant Randy Riddle, will be very, very nice when they do so. Otherwise, Sergeant Riddle may come to their doorstep and beat the snot out of them.
Well, if he comes to my doorstep, he'll be greeted with a shotgun. Hey, wait a minute. Now, you bust into my door illegally. That's perfectly legal. I didn't say the shotgun would be loaded. I just say he will be greeted with it.
Mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
can use it as a clause.
So you've got an email, Addy, for the Asheville, North Carolina Police Department.
It is internet/police@... Asheville, and that's spelled ASHEVILLENC, as in North Carolina, .gov.
Say it again. internet/police@Asheville.
Asheville, that's ASHEVILLENC, as in North Carolina, .gov. Now, if you want to make your opinions known to the city of Asheville, as in the state government or the city government,
mm-hmm.
you can do that too. That's at www.AshevilleNC.gov.
Very good. Very, very good.
I've already emailed them.
Well, very nice. And I'm sure you were incredibly polite.
Actually, no, I wasn't. I told them this city needed a new name. It should be now known as Naziville.
Or Nuremville. I'm sorry. Well, okay. Well, Susan, I appreciate it. Thank you, dear.
You're more than welcome.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
You want to fire off an email? Be very nice. You know, you don't want to get Randy Riddle all riled. Don't get Randy Riddle riled. Oh, I'm a professional broadcaster because I can do alliterative things like that, can't I? Yeah. An email rolls in. I love you guys. If the sign said Acts 2:38 or hell, the result would be the same, right? No, it wouldn't be the same. Not at all. Because that's trying to save souls. And I'm sure Randy Riddle is a fine, upstanding Christian. Oh, and by the way, the photograph of the flag rape, it was three guys with microphones. It was Larry Craig, Trent Lott, and Orrin Hatch singing Let the Eagle Is Soar or whatever, covered up in flag desecration. Just flags everywhere. Ugh. Okay, I tell you what, we're gonna forego the news here. We have on the phone with us, and boy, I appreciate the short notice. We're joined on the phone by America's best investigative journalist, Greg Pallast. Greg, thanks for dropping by on such short notice. I do appreciate it.
For you, Bob, anything, name it.
Oh, bless your heart. I wanted to get in touch with you primarily because this is, of course, the second anniversary of what I consider to be the very deliberate rape of the Lower Ninth Ward and the Gulf Coast region following Katrina. You've been there a lot of times in the interim, and I wanted to just get your impression of where we are today and why we are where we are.
Well, there are 89,000 families still living in an aluminum Guantanamo, you know, in that mobile home gulag that Bush's FEMA and Homeland Security has set up. These people cannot return, are not allowed to return. Let's remember that New Orleans, you know, for all the pictures of poverty, is still a working class town. That's as the South's only deep water port. And in addition, they built part of the space shuttle there. Those people cannot return. They can't put their mobile homes on their own property. They're just not even allowed to return back. I mean, they don't want those people back, and that's just the cold truth. In fact, you know what the FEMA designation is for the 89,000 families that can't return?
No.
They call them Democrats. So you understand what's going on here. This is voter purging by other means. If they lived in Bangladesh after the tsunami, they'd be back. But because it's Bush America, they ain't coming back, and they're never going to be allowed back. And that's one of the things I've been investigating, including the fact, by the way, and there's some, by the way, some Democrats in connivance, like the mayor, Ray Nagin,
mm-hmm.
who was a Republican, switched to the Democratic Party to run for mayor. And, I know his parents are African American, but he's part of a small African American elite that fears the working class and poor African Americans returning. So he's in grand connivance with George, because if they return, he won't get their votes either. So that's part of the story that's going down.
Now, you've documented a lot of this, haven't you, Greg? You've got a new DVD out, Big Easy to Big Empty, is that right?
That's right. In fact, you can see a big hunk of it, because I'm not trying to keep it all secret, Big Easy to Big Empty, How the White House Drowned New Orleans. And at gregpalace.com, that streams. It's out on DVD. In addition, of course, the new edition of Armed Madhouse, my book, which is the new subtitle, by the way, is Armed Madhouse from Baghdad to New Orleans, Sordid Secrets and Strange Tales of a White House Gone Wild, because I added a chapter about New Orleans and what really has gone down there.
In many ways, this is, I recall the line about that J.R.R. Tolkien used when he was writing The Lord of the Rings. He said the tale grew in the telling. That really that applies to Armed Madhouse as well, because just when you think you've got everything tightly packaged up, all the evil and all the nastiness and all the shenanigans and the connivances, you crack open a new one.
They keep me in business, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that happened, the reason I had to add a new chapter, my publisher, Penguin, was screaming, of course, it's expensive, but I had to, because I went down to New Orleans, and one of the first things I found is I want to know why people couldn't get out. And, you know, I'm on Long Island, New York right now, I'm calling you from, and I worked on evacuation planning here, And I can tell you that, you know, every firehouse, every police department, every hospital has a copy of the plan. You know what to do.
Yeah.
There's no plan for, on Long Island, which is one of the richest metropolitan areas in America, that to have people float face down to evacuate from a hurricane. It doesn't happen. That's not what happens here. And that's in every city. But in New Orleans, where you have federal levies and under federal law, it's a federalized situation, the Bush administration, if you call it that,
yeah,
took over and privatized hurricane evacuation planning. I mean, this is like they did it in Iraq, you know, just like they privatized the war in Iraq. They privatized the hurricane.
Well, and some
they
of the people
out the contract.
Some of the same people that they privatized and gave the money to in Iraq have found themselves in possession of the money in New Orleans too. I'm talking about Blackwater.
Okay.
You've seen those people all over the Crescent City, haven't you, Greg?
That's right. So you have the same mercenary force harassing the locals in Baghdad and on the bayous, both. So what's happened is, in fact, in the case of New Orleans, some of the only housing that wasn't destroyed, you have to understand about 80% of the houses were destroyed. People think it's not a few houses. You're talking 80% of the housing was destroyed in New Orleans. And some of the only housing remained standing, was the public housing because it was on high ground, hurricane proof, built out of concrete. Beautiful places, not like the Bronx or something. These are townhouses that were right near the French Quarter and very valuable real estate. So the hurricane was a great cover. The 82nd Airborne, I kid you not, came in and part of it and got those people out at gunpoint. You have to evacuate. They probably should evacuate. But they won't let them back in. 2 years later, there's still bars on the windows, seals on the door. People can't come back into houses that are in perfect condition.
Yeah, if you get into one of these things, it's not like there's mold on the walls and water standing in the kitchen floor.
I've been in some of my friends' homes where they're completely destroyed, and I broke into one of these housing units, and they were in perfect condition. But they don't want the poor folk back. The plan has always been sell off these units to the yuppies. So the idea is you're going to take a city of 500,000 people and turn it into a city of 250,000 people, which is basically a little tourist town. And to enforce that, they hired Blackwater to threaten anyone with arrest. In fact, if you go see the clip from Big Easy to Big Empty, you'll listen to a woman crying that I found on the street. I said, "What's wrong?" And night's falling. She's come back to her own house. Night's falling. She got off a bus with her kids. She goes to her own house. Blackwater shows up and says, "We're going to arrest you if you try to go into your own house." And I said, "Where are you going tonight?" She says, "I don't know. That's what I want to know, mister. Where am I going tonight with my kids? I have no idea. I can't go in my own house." This is what's going down in New Orleans. And
this is, frankly, Greg, this is...
I mean, there's really no plan for building houses. I mean, you have to understand, there's hardly any new housing being built by the Bush administration. They're locking people out of what's there. But it serves the electoral purpose. It's the only state in America which is going from Democrat to Republican instead of Republican to Democrat.
And yet the Bush administration put out this laundry list a couple of days ago, Greg, of where the money's gone. Are you seeing where the money's gone?
Yeah. Haley Barbour was the chairman of the Republican Party,
yeah,
who is now governor of Mississippi. You have four times as much federal money going to Mississippi, which had a fragment of the damage of Louisiana, but into what was a Democratic state, they're putting in nothing. They want to make sure that the people are angry with the Democrats who are running the state by starving them out of their money, where they're lavishing money on Mississippi. We saw this in Florida. Before the 2004 election, you had four hurricanes hit Florida, and Brother Jeb got billions of loot. It was showered on Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to look at going back to evacuation. When they privatized this, you have to understand what they did here. They privatized evacuation planning, and they turned it over to crony contractors, this company called Innovative Emergency Management.
On
the film,
sake.
You'll see, I go to their office and say, "What's your experience in evacuating a city before you came up with this plan?" Which, by the way, when I asked FEMA for the plan, you know what they told me? They said, "We can't locate it." I kid you not. I have that on tape. FEMA
dog-ate it.
We can't locate the evacuation plan for New Orleans. How do you evacuate people? And then, by the way, then for a while they tried to say it's national security. I said, how can you have a secret, confidential evacuation plan? You know, it's, you know, what are you afraid? Osama will, is in there and he's going to sneak out? What are you talking about?
Yeah, the people who need to evacuate need to know what the plan is.
No kidding. Like the police, who didn't have a copy of the plan, by the way. And so what happened was, the plan, when I finally got it, I understand why they wanted to pretend that it got washed away or something. The plan was, for $1 million to the private contractor, was the plan was, get in your car and drive like hell. That's it. There was nothing for anyone without a car, which happens to be, which was 127,000 people who were basically told, sink or swim, literally. That was it.
Well, I just got done reading the account of Dr. Anna Powell's experience in the one hospital there. And how are the, you know, those people who are on life support in hospitals, how are they supposed to drive, Greg? I mean, this kind of stuff just makes me insane.
Well, that's the whole thing. Here on Long Island, for example, if there's a hurricane, there is one about every 10 to 15 years. What you do is there's a listing of every nursing home. There's a listing of hospitals. Everyone has to have a plan. We know what the plans are. There's automated dialing to warn people. There are buses set up. There are helicopters set up. And by the way, there was a plan for New Orleans. The Louisiana State University Hurricane Center knew that what Bush had done was a bogus baloney. So they had an evacuation plan. They offered it to the White House a year before Katrina, and the White House said, buzz off, you're getting the contractors upset. That's what happened.
You know, I hate it when contractors get upset.
I love this one.
Yeah.
They let out a contract. They let out a contract to find out what went wrong with the federal evacuation plan. And they gave the contract to Innovative Emergency Management, the guys who did the bogus plan.
Now, I know you know the answer. Who's behind which Republican donor is behind Innovative Emergency Management, Greg?
God, you have a dirty mind. In fact, when I went into their offices, I said, have you ever done any evacuation planning for any city before New Orleans, like the most vulnerable city in America? And they said they couldn't name any cities that they'd ever worked for. So I said, well, maybe this is your experience. And I pulled out like 4 pages of donations to the Republican Party. You know, I mean, and you know,
oh, look, God.
There were some Democrats who got dirty here, too, because they, at the state level, the company hired up some state officials to put on their payroll. And, you know, so they weren't. This is how the game is played. But, you know, you have to understand, ultimately, it was federal levees that broke. It's a federal problem, and that's what George Bush was trying to duck out from with his little photo strafing, saying, gee, those people look wet down there. That's the game.
This is, you know, you mentioned Haley Barbour a couple of minutes ago, Greg. Did I read correctly the other day that his firm, his Washington lobbying firm, has been hired by Ayatollah Lawi to advance his political future in Iraq, at the same time that they're, you know, that they're playing with the funny money with Katrina relief? I mean, is there no shame to these people?
Yeah, Haley Barbour ran one of the hottest, basically influence peddling shops in Washington D.C. After he left as chieftain of the Republican Party, he basically went out and sold his Rolodex, and particularly one of their big specialties of his firm was to hook you up for those no bid contracts in Iraq. I mean, it was the new gold rush. And now I don't know how much he still officially has to do with his own former consulting firm, but you know, usually when you split off from these consulting firms, you get a percentage of their work for 5 years of their revenue. So don't worry, I'm not crying about what he's giving up. Yeah, so basically, the experience in crony contracting started with Iraq, and he just brought it on home.
And I guess what I'm trying to get at, Greg, is Iraq and New Orleans are sort of two sides of the same coin, aren't they? It's the same kind of ineptitude. It's the same kind of malice. It's the same kind of criminal negligence.
Well, yeah, criminal negligence is the right term. It's actually a term used in the film by a lawyer and a former city councilman of New Orleans. And look, they knew. And in fact, one of the things you have to know when you talk about criminal negligence, this is not a term I throw around lightly because I used to work on racketeering prosecutions.
That's why I use the term. I mean, you know what...
It's a serious concept, but here's what happened. The White House knew on midnight of Monday the 29th, 2 years ago, that the levees of New Orleans were cracking because they got the information, the White House Situation Room, from the Army Corps helicopters flying through the hurricane, through the storm over the levees. But they didn't tell the state police. They didn't tell the Emergency Evacuation Center in Baton Rouge. They wouldn't tell the state. Now, you have to understand, Hurricane Katrina never hit New Orleans. That's very important to understand. The hurricane never hit New Orleans. It went east of the city, but the storm surge destroyed the levees. So what happened was, the evacuation teams out of the state and the state police stopped evacuating the city because they had a big enough problem evacuating east where the hurricane was centered. And they thought, well, everything is hunky-dory in New Orleans. They were high-fiving it. They thought the city's safe. No one told them that the city was about to drown because, see, once the levees crack, they can't hold. That's over. It's over with.
Yeah.
And so by 2 o'clock the next afternoon, that is about 14 hours later, not unexpectedly, the cracks became, you know, bursts, they became walls of death. And the State Emergency Evacuation Center found out about the implosion of the levees, not from the White House, but by watching the levees collapse on CNN.
And seeing the water come down the streets.
Yeah. That's when they
But now how many hours had passed during in this span, Greg? The White House had known they were breaking?
14 hours the White House withheld this crucial information. If I asked the head of now remember, where did I get this information? Not like from some black helicopter.
Right.
I got it from Dr. Ivor von Heerden. He's the number one hurricane expert in America. He is the deputy director of the Hurricane Center at Louisiana State. And he was in the emergency center advising the state, and he said they had no idea that the federal government knew the levees were cracking. They had no idea the levees were breached. They were constantly being told everything is fine. And so, and I said, so what's the effect of withholding this information? The bottom line is 1,500 people drowned.
And somehow that has to rise to the level of what we were just talking about, criminal negligence.
Criminal negligence.
A willful, wanton disregard for the lives of others.
Right. And that's what was going down between the bogus evacuation plan, and there was one other element. 2 years before Katrina, the White House was informed that the levees were 18 inches too short because of an error in the calculation of sea level by the Army Corps of Engineers. And it was so serious that the hurricane experts went to the White House, not just the FEMA or the Army Corps, they went to the White House and said, you've got a serious, immediate emergency problem here that has to be dealt with. But, you know, there's a bit of a problem. The Army Corps was otherwise occupied in building bridges in Iraq and blowing them up again. And so instead of, you know, saving New Orleans, they were out on the Tigris. This is... You know, there are all kinds of costs,
and there's a traceable cause and effect chain that you've done a very good job in establishing. Well, knowing now, you know, George went down and gave his little speech at the school where the charter school that has no books in its library. I caught that a couple of days ago, Greg. He made his little speech, and he's talking about, you know, we haven't forgotten you. It's not a question of whether he's forgotten. It's a question of funding. What's going to happen to New Orleans? You know, at the same time that he was saying we haven't forgotten you, he was putting in a request for another $50 billion for his war in Iraq. What's going to happen to New Orleans?
Look, the LSU people said for $30 billion, which is not as much as you think, for given what's going down in Iraq, that we've spent nearly half a trillion in Iraq. It's a tenth of the cost of the war in Iraq so far. For $30 billion, we could completely protect the Gulf Coast with sea locks and the whole schmear.
I imagine that'd give some...
$7 billion instead. And what's happening is they're rebuilding the levees again at the wrong height because it's too difficult and too expensive right now to build them correctly. There's some raising the levees, but you have to understand, these are like big, giant steel plates, what they've got.
Yeah.
And they're doing it on the cheap. Now, the according to the 1935 law, the federal government has to make that city safe. When people say, how come people are living there below sea level? Because they were told to. The federal government said, this city is safe. Someone's got to run this port. Someone's got to build a space shuttle. If you put your house here, you're safe. Like the Lower Ninth is, they said this is, the industrial canal was supposed to be impregnable. That's why those people were there. Because they're told if you go somewhere else, you're in danger. But here you're safe.
Oh my God! You know, and I think about the landing crafts that went to Omaha Beach on D-Day. They were built there too. People have been in it. You know, you listen to right-wing talk, Greg, and they say, you know, they make it sound as if people are just a bunch of no good slackers and layabouts who are there because they lack the initiative to go anywhere else.
And I love the idea that people just didn't want to get out. I mean, in fact, by the way, we talk about right-wing radio. That was in the New York Times. Where they were writing, where there was a columnist from the New York Times, the liberals, saying, hey, how come people didn't get out? When I live on Virginia Beach and we all get out, yeah, which happens to be one of the richest beach communities in America. Yeah, and you know, yeah, you get in your, you get in your Mercedes and you get out.
And if your
grandma's in a wheelchair, you just have the maid take care of her, right? But, you know, when they say get out, I was with one guy, Stephen Smith. He can't swim. The walls imploded. He couldn't, his car, he didn't have much money. He was working at a hotel. His car was in a repair shop. The water came in. He got to a roof. He can't swim. He himself floated on a mattress and picked up a dozen people and kept bringing them to an overpass that was above the flood water. And then he stood there for 4 days before they were picked up. And in the 4 days, he was with a grandfather and his grandkids, and the grandfather died of dehydration, giving his grandkids his last bottles of fresh water. And the guy died of dehydration on the bridge. That's what happened.
And that happened time after time after time after time. So, you know, when they re-upify New Orleans as we go forward, Greg, who's gonna be there to wash the dishes in the commander's palace or the various and sundry other restaurants and entertainment venues? Who's gonna wash the dishes? Who's gonna mop the floors if they're not gonna let people back into?
Jose's doing it. Look, I'm not an immigrant basher.
No, I know that.
And that when they talk about that the population is now up to 50%. Of its original population, which by itself would be a dismal, shameful number in any other nation in the world, that half of people of a city 2 years later are still not returned. But it's not true that half have returned, because half of the half that have returned weren't there before the hurricane. These are either contractors, mercenaries, or an entire army of people from Latin America who have come in, El Salvador and particularly Guatemala. And I can tell you right now, I mean, Stephen Smith, who used to work at a hotel in the French Quarter, he can't get back because some guy from El Salvador has taken his job. I don't have against anything people from El Salvador, but their salaries are dropping. I saw INS guys who were themselves running hire pools. You'll love this. They're running hire pools for workers from El Salvador to go in and clean up dangerous mold infested houses. They would strip them down without any protective gear. These guys would work under contract for a week. They obviously had no papers, and at the end of the week when they try to collect, they'd say, you know, scram, Sam, or we'll bust you. Really nice. This is what's going down.
You know, I wish we could get to the part of the conversation where we talk about remedies, Greg, because people need to be prosecuted for this, people need to be imprisoned for this, and real political change needs to happen, I guess, to bring about any sort of hope. Is there hope if we get maybe a Democrat in 08 or the Congress, the congressional majority gets a little bit bigger, or we get the Senate in a little stronger position? Is there hope for this?
There's hope, but, you know, it's not going to come from the top. You got Obama talking about bootstraps, you know. What bootstraps? Their boots have washed away.
Yeah, there ain't no boots.
What's he talking about? You know, this bogus stuff to charter schools. See, it's the game. You know, they fired every single teacher in New Orleans. Was fired every single one. That's what we treat. How we treated the survivors, the people trying to rebuild their city. They fired them all, and they said, "Now you've got charter schools. You've got all the privateers and pirates in there running so-called schools. They may not have books. They may have teachers who don't have any degrees in anything, or it might be their dumb brother-in-law who can't add 3 and 6, and he's teaching math. But he's got a contract, and there's no labor unions. Don't worry about labor unions down there anymore. So that's what's going down.
Oh, this is just a triumph for the free market, isn't it?
The people it's people themselves who are going to rebuild their own city against the politicians, not with them. People like I was in the film, you'll meet Malik Rahim, whose group of residents are rebuilding 300. They took an apartment building, rebuilding their building, 350 units. Now, by the way, that was I'm trying to say nice things, but it keeps coming up to grim stuff, because in that case, the 350 tenants, after they rebuilt their apartment, the owners of the buildings, which agreed to sell them the units because the buildings were wrecked, they're going to sell it to them for low cost. Once the tenants fixed them up, they evicted them all, 350 families. This is what's going down.
So is the judicial system just broken too? I mean, everything's come unglued.
The judicial system, everything's unglued. What judicial system? All the papers are washed away. You got guys in prison, they don't even know why they're there anymore. And that means, innocent people are languishing in prison. No one knows that they're charged with. Criminals are being let go because some judges are saying, well, we can't help you. We don't know why they're here. I mean, it's just a complete madness. And, of course, you had a police force which evacuated before the citizens. So it's like...
Yeah. And the ones who stayed, a bunch of them committed suicide.
Yep. And so, right, the few that really put their hearts into it, they just got punished for doing it. Their jobs were threatened. Their livelihoods a mess. Their lives crushed.
So is it a lawless place right now, Greg? I mean,
well, there's not much of a place is the problem. If you go to New Orleans, even today, 2 years later, you can drive for miles and just see nothing but devastation. It is incredible. It is, there's more housing that destroyed today than there was in Berlin after World War II. That's not an exaggeration. And there is no program, no plan. You hear Bush talk about his programs, but he has something called the Road Home and all this. It's all junk. They're not giving out anything. And then Small Business Administration is in there giving out loans, but they're requiring people to have, full credit and down payments. And they don't have nothing.
No.
They have people filling out credit applications who've just, you have to understand, people not only lose their homes, they lost their jobs because their businesses were wiped out and moved away.
Sure.
Some of the biggest industries closed down and moved away permanently. Chris Ruth Steakhouse, which is a big national chain, based in New Orleans, originated in New Orleans, they're gone forever. They moved to, like, Tennessee or something. It's like, so what's happened is that these big industries have shut down. They said, that's it. It's over with.
I guess the last question, Greg, is based on what you've seen, And the criminal negligence that we've talked about, and the willful wanton conduct, was this about an opportunistic ability to change an area that the Republicans hated, or is this an exemplar of what could happen to any American city?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
If obviously we know that, as we saw in Mississippi, where you've got a Republican connected governor, the money arrived, but it still was grim the way they handled it. It could happen to any American city. What's happening here is even more than keeping the Democrats out and making it a city safe for the Republican Party. What it is also doing is, this is class war, and this is just the kind of sharp edge of what's all over America. The waters are rising everywhere. I mean, if you're losing, whether you lose your home because of the subprime loan baloney that was permitted, or from floodwaters from Katrina, you're still losing your home. And this is what's happening all over America. So we have to look at Katrina and the removal of the labor unions, like the teachers union, et cetera, as practice for the rest of the United States.
Dress rehearsal.
Well, I'm not happy note. go to GregPalace.com, watch Big Easy and Big Empty, the big pieces, get some of it. Or until Patriot Act 3, you can read the book, Our Madhouse.
And Our Madhouse is out in paperback and with new sections added. Greg, thank you so much for all the time you've spent. I really do appreciate it. We consider you a great friend of this program.
Thank you, and good work, Bob. Bye.
Thanks. Bye, Greg. Armed Madhouse is available in paperback now. If you haven't read it yet, you owe it to yourself to get your hands on it. I've watched the clips that are available at gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST.com. I want the whole video, and I'm going to get my hands on it. Big Easy to Big Empty, How the White House is Still Drowning New Orleans. If you can watch these clips, and if you can have a dry eye, if you cannot scream when you watch this stuff, something's wrong. But of course, you know, the next February, in the dead of winter, I'm sure that ABC and CBS and CNN and MSNBC. Oh God, do you remember? The last February, the Mardi Gras when they had when CNN trotted out Miles O'Brien in a coconut bra or something like that. Do you remember that? Oh, everything's back to normal in New Orleans. It's all happy now. Look, Miles O'Brien's. Oh my God. Well, there's an opportunity to have the real truth about it, and that truth has been chronicled by Greg Palast. And you know, he's not out there pulling down a huge salary from anybody. He's working like a lot of us are. We've got donate buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Greg has donate buttons at his site too. And he has a book. You can buy it. It's out in paperback. Again, with a completely new added section. The tale grows in the telling. Get your hands on it if you haven't read it. It's about 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a break. I need one. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, and education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing as cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Seven before the hour, we're halfway done with tonight's program. A reminder or programming note for you, if you will. America's most fabulous conversation talk radio host, Peter Godbold, is still under the weather. He is resting. His voice was in pretty rough shape last we spoke. He's trying to get it back. He had a guest scheduled for this evening, a musician, an artist by the name of Ernest Cole. We were all looking forward to that conversation. It will be rescheduled. If you're tuning in to hear Ernest, we will have him on Peter's program in the very near future, and we will make it widely known when that rescheduled date is. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to hearing Ernest as well. Beautiful work. Great work. Now, over at, well, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm hard-pressed to actually do it justice. But I was asking for, I was asking Greg Palast about, you know, where the money went. And he made it abundantly clear that the whole thing was just a boondoggle. In terms of making the money do what the money needed to do to get New Orleans, the Lower Ninth Ward, all of the Gulf Coast back on its feet. And he pointed out the wild dichotomy, divergence, if you will, between how democratic New Orleans was treated as opposed to staunchly right-wing, uber-Republican Mississippi. And yet Mississippi is still a broken place. I saw a Mark Fiore cartoon last night. I believe it was our good buddy Gene who sent it along to me. New Orleans used to have six hospitals, six major trauma centers. New Orleans has one now. And the best the Attorney General of Louisiana could do was to try to prosecute Dr. Anna Powell for standing at her station and remaining on the job and doing the damn dead-level best that she could in total darkness and 120-degree heat, sweltering humidity, with the agony of bedridden patients echoing in her ears. And that son-of-a-bitch A.G., charged her with murder. The grand jury declined to indict. Frankly, I'd be surprised if the grand jury hadn't attempted to ride the AG out on a rail. God knows he would have deserved it. And that's that disconnect that I suffer so much of the time, trying to understand how it is that people can go out and do evil and feel like, you know, everything's okay when they come home in the evening. As if there is a public person and a private person, and somehow the two are compartmentalized. It reminds me, if I can find it here, there's some lines... There are some lines from T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Yeah, let's see. And indeed, there will be time for the yellow smoke that slides along the street, rubbing its back upon the window panes. There will be time. There will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you, and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions and for 100 visions and revisions before the taking of a toast and tea. In the room the women come and go talking of Michelangelo. And indeed there will be time to wonder, do I dare? And do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin, my necktie rich and modest but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. But that line, there will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. Isn't that, in a nutshell, a description of people like the Attorney General of Louisiana, who up to his neck in misery and death chose to prosecute one woman who, standing by her oath, her station, her job, her art, her science, would not abandon the agony? And he had a face that he put on before he went to the grand jury to try to convince that grand jury. And if you you may have heard the saying out there that any good prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. How thin, how pathetic, how utterly morally bereft must have been that case that a grand jury looked at him and said, get the hell out before we run you out. I asked that question with some degree of futility of Greg Palast. Where does New Orleans go? What happens now? Is it just done? Is it over? Are they screwed forever? And he said, it will rebuild, but it will be rebuilt by people from the bottom up, not from the top down. The top down is broken. Now, I think there are, you know, there are people on the top, at the top, who might make an appreciable difference. Clearing out some of these godless, soulless, motherless Republicans in the Senate and the House would be a start, so that you could have committee hearings that were actually focused on getting work done as opposed to playing politics with people's lives. And some Democratic presidential contenders would be better than others in addressing the needs of the working poor in New Orleans, who have taken this whole damned thing on the chin, the 80,000 plus families that still live in sheet metal refugee camps. Some would be better than others. If Barack Obama is out there talking about New Orleans picking itself up by its own bootstraps, I agree with Greg Palast. That's a bunch of BS. On the other hand, people who talk about marshaling the full weight and force of the federal government to work for good, people like Dennis Kucinich, would be better. But, of course, we know what an uphill climb Dennis faces, not because people don't get his message, but because people aren't allowed to hear his message. I saw an exchange. It was emailed to me, an exchange he had with Joe Scarborough on MSNBC, in which he held Hillary Clinton to account for her vote to authorize the war. And I thought his analysis of the situation was spot on. If you voted for it, if you say that you were bamboozled by George Bush into voting for the war, what business have you in the White House when you're that easily bamboozled, when you're that gullible? Now, if one was bamboozled into voting for the war, that kind of indicates that sort of person, that's not the sort of person that needs presidential power. If, on the other hand, you're lying and you just voted for the war because, frankly, it's okay to bomb brown people even if they haven't done anything, and, you know, maybe your constituents in the defense industry said that it'd be good for them because they'd be able to build a whole bunch more smart bombs and laser-guided hot damn missiles, then that's even worse, isn't it? It's a hell of a lot worse. So, the video's out there. Go watch it if you want to. It's at YouTube. Dennis Kucinich, Joe Scarborough. He answers every question. And he points out some things. You know, the people who are hearing his message are all over his message. 17,000 members of the AFL-CIO stood to their feet every time Dennis Kucinich spoke at Soldier Field in Chicago. How many times was that mentioned on CNN? How many times was it mentioned on Fox? How many times was it mentioned on ABC, CBS, NBC? How about collectively none? Huh? Yeah. The AFL-CIO leadership stood there and watched how its membership responded to Dennis Kucinich, and yet the AFL-CIO still sits on its hands and says, we're not gonna endorse anybody. Not during the primaries. And that's the AFL-CIO endorsement. That's not the individual. That's not the individual unions. No. Because individual unions are running out there and shooting themselves squarely in the foot. Let's see, who's the latest to unload the gun into their feet? The International Association of Machinists has endorsed Hillary Clinton for president today. John Edwards had expected to pick up the labor endorsement from the 700,000-strong industrial trade union. Tom Buffenbarger, IAM president, said that the union chose Hillary Clinton because, quote, she is the only candidate of either party to come forward with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. I call BS on you, Tom Buffenbarger. I call BS on you. More than 3 years ago, Dennis Kucinich was talking about repealing NAFTA, repealing GATT, getting out of the WTO, things that you and your union begged for, Tom Buffenbarger. So no, you know, don't hand us chicken crap and try to make us think it's chicken salad. Don't lie to your members, Tom Buffenbarger. Hillary Clinton is not the only candidate with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. Don't lie, sir. Don't lie. But that's not all. No, not at all. Let's see. There's another one out here. There it is. Two major unions. I'm reading this over at our friends, Workers Independent News. Two major unions have endorsed candidates in the Democratic presidential primary. James Brunkenhofer, National Legislative Director for the United Transportation Union, says Senator Hillary Clinton won his union's endorsement because she supports working family interests, and the UTU has a history of supporting the Clintons that goes back to the 70s. Well, okay, it's the latter and not the former, because supports working family interests? You know what? You're not supporting working family interests when you're voting to go to war with a country that hasn't done anything to you, when you're voting to send working family sons and daughters, cousins, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, fathers, and mothers into a meat grinder. That is directly contrary to working family interests, isn't it? Brunkenhofer said, our goal is to change the party that represents the White House, and as of today, looking towards the future, it looks like that Hillary Clinton would have the best chance. See, I've talked in the past a little bit about how, in large part, organized labor doesn't get modern media, doesn't understand it, doesn't have a clue, doesn't know what it's going to take to get change. And Mr. Brunkenhofer has apparently not been listening to right-wing hate radio. He doesn't know that there is a full-fledged, fully formed, absolutely ready-to-go swift boat slime machine that is aimed right at Hillary Clinton that will make what was done to John Kerry look like child's play. Because, you know, he doesn't listen to that kind of stuff. He doesn't realize that whether it's CNN or Fox or ABC, CBS or NBC, that the blast faxes of the Republican National Committee and all of its affiliated smear machines already have all the networks on speed dial. They're more than willing to write the news stories for them, and since the networks are in essence lazy bastards, that it will go from the computer printer or from the fax machine of the RNC straight to air, because that's less work for Wolf Blitzer. Then there's the International Association of Firefighters, and their president, Harold Schaeferger. They've endorsed Senator Chris Dodd. What? Because of Dodd's record of support for working people and for issues the firefighters are concerned about. Huh? Yeah, I'd like to talk to one of these union bosses, and I'd like to ask him point blank. Why in the hell won't you support one of your own brothers in this presidential nominating process? Hillary Clinton has never held a union card. Hillary Clinton's never paid union dues. Hillary Clinton isn't a member of a union. Except unless you count the American Bar Association. And the same applies to John Edwards. Maybe he's a member of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America and the ABA. Good guy, like John Edwards, mostly. Barack Obama, sorry, no union card. Chris Dodd, no union card. Bill Richardson, no union card. There's one person running for the presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket that to this day has a union card, that to this day continues to pay his dues, that to this day spends the better part of every waking hour thinking about how America can meet the needs and level the playing field for working people, and who understands that allowing Americans who wish to do so to freely be able to join a union is the best way to rebuild a shattered middle class in this country. Not Hillary, not Barack, not John, not Chris, not Joe Biden, not Bill Richardson, only one, Dennis Kucinich. Only one. But I doubt if I'd get a straight answer if I got to ask that kind of question. I'd hear some I'd hear some psychobabble about electability. And I'm sick to death of that discussion. I had a listener make a mistake. I think she thought I was somebody else on the network. Thought that at some point I had said Dennis Kucinich is unelectable. I don't say that. I hate that BS argument. Dennis is electable. Time after time after time, when you see 17,000 trade unionists get to their feet every time he opens his mouth, you know the man is electable. When you see ABC News have to scrub an entire online poll because Dennis Kucinich is outpacing Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards by a matter of thousands of online votes, and they got to scrub it and start over at zero, and then he comes back from zero and wins again. You know that Dennis Kucinich is electable. When you talk to ordinary on-the-street Americans and you ask them about universal health care and they say, well, yeah, and you ask them whether or not it's more important that Americans be able to make the goods that Americans buy or some poor slave chained to a damn table in Longdong province in China, and they go, well, hell, that'd be the Americans. You know that Dennis Kucinich is electable. I don't know where this electability BS comes from. I'm sick of it. I hate it. I despise it. I loathe it. Even a person I consider to be a very, very good friend, I mean, we've never sat down and drank tequila together or anything, but I consider him a very good friend, took some really uncalled for snarky pot shots at Dennis just yesterday. Because he had the temerity to call Hillary out for her vote for the war. Hillary has to answer for her vote for the war. And if, in fact, she says she was duped by George Bush, we deserve, as the electorate, as Democrats, considering her candidacy, we deserve to be able to look at her and say, ma'am, how gullible are you? Dennis Kucinich never fell for it. Dennis Kucinich had the same information you did, and he voted 100% of the time against this war. Are you willing to confess, Senator Clinton, that Dennis Kucinich is more perceptive than you are, madam? We deserve to be able to ask her that. We deserve to be able to ask her if she would once and for all say that there will be no preemptive wars in a Senator Clinton administration. No preemptive wars. We deserve to be able to ask her that. And if we get some sort of politically babblesome BS about how, well, you know, I don't think a president should talk about that. No, no, no! If you cannot be candid and honest with the American people in the electoral process, how can we expect honesty and candor from you in the White House, madam? And not just Senator Clinton. Ask the same question of Barack Obama. Ask it of John Edwards. Ask it of Dodd. Ask it of Biden. Ask it of Richardson. And ask it of Dennis Kucinich. I said preemptive war. I didn't say war in general. I said preemptive war. Can you swear to us that you will not start a war against a non-belligerent nation on your own initiative as a first strike? Ask every Democrat that question, and you will find out in a hurry which one's the real Democrat. Because there's only one who will tell you unequivocally, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he will not start a war based on lies, based on paranoia, based on supposition, hyperbole, that he will not preemptively strike another country. You know, in the interview with Joe Scarborough, he said, we're going to take these neocons and we're going to turn their crazy ideas on their head. It's not peace through strength. It's strength through peace. I doubt we'll ever get to see anyone be forced. Do you think anybody but Dennis Kucinich would look you squarely in the eye and say, no, I will never start a preemptive war? Would anybody do that except Dennis Kucinich? No, you'd get tap dancing. You'd get the same kind of political footwork that Larry Craig engaged in the men's room. And with a very similar moral basis, if you will. I can't figure out labor. I can't figure out people who say they're Democrats. I hear, well, you know, we want to win in 08. So do I. That's why I'm behind Dennis Kucinich. Because I believe in the American people, and I believe in their ability to look up and go, you know what, he's been right all along. This is the guy who should be president. And I know that there are people out there falling asleep every night saying, dear Jesus, please let Al Gore enter the race, please. And I wouldn't be upset if Al Gore entered the race. Of course, Senator Clinton and Barack Obama are falling asleep every night going, dear Jesus, please don't let Al Gore enter the race, please. I know those people are out there. And I don't know what you have to do to convince them. I just don't know. I don't know. But I tell you what, as long as you and I are out here talking about the electability, not the unelectability, but the electability of the only man who has been dead on, straight up, 100% correct for more than the last 4 years, and we don't take no for an answer, there's a greater likelihood of that unelectability BS washing away. Because it's a construct. It's made up. It's dummied up. It's ginned up. It's faked up. It's phony. So we'll come back after the news, and we'll see what you've got on your mind, if you care to call in, or I can sit here and just babble my little fool head off. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4 head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. I look forward to it. This is America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A congressional report released today on Iraq's progress finds that the new Iraqi government has failed to meet at least 13 of 18 required benchmarks. Even before that report was released, the Pentagon and State Department objected to many of its findings. Hazardous materials experts removed a chemical warfare agent that was found in an office near the United Nations headquarters in New York City. It's believed the materials were taken from Iraq's main chemical weapons facility 11 years ago and were mistakenly filed away. A Taliban group has released the last of the South Korean hostages held in Afghanistan. Christian missionaries were handed over to Red Cross officials today. After more than a month in captivity, the Taliban executed two of their fellow captives. The Army says two full-scale fraud investigations have been opened concerning military contracts awarded for services in Iraq and Kuwait. Currently, there are 76 ongoing criminal investigations of contracts given out since the U.S. invasion in 2003. On the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, Taliban leaders say they've captured 300 Pakistani soldiers. Violence in the region has increased since July when government troops stormed a mosque to root out Islamist extremists. The United Nations Nuclear Agency says that Iran is expanding its uranium enrichment program, but is producing less nuclear fuel. U.S. officials insist Iran's nuclear program is for weapons, not for civilian purposes. The president of Virginia Tech says he will not resign over the Virginia Tech massacre that left 33 people dead this past April. That despite a governor's panel report released today. The investigative report found that if the university had responded faster to warn students that a killer was on the loose, lives could have been saved. GOP members are further isolating Idaho Republican Senator Larry Craig after his recent arrest in an airport men's room. Another Republican senator, John Ensign of Nevada, has suggested that Craig step down. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign will give $23,000 to charity. The money was received from a donor who has an arrest warrant for fraud. And the Greek finance ministry says recent wildfires that killed 64 people also destroyed $1.6 billion in property.
Hi, I'm Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. The only way to travel is by using the very best, and the very best in a major sleep product is any mattress from Monterey Mattress Company. Literally serving all parts of the world, we have been building the finest latex foam and innerspring mattresses for well over 20 years. Using our world-famous hotels as a measuring stick, you'll more often hear the name Monterey Mattress, as we supply over 100 resort hotels in this area. Far exceeding industry standards, these mattresses are available to you at factory prices. In addition to the local recognition, Monterey Mattress Company has been shipping beds worldwide to the many visitors who have experienced a great night's sleep here. This is the ultimate endorsement enjoyed by very few businesses. Monterey Mattress Company. We simply build the best, whether for your home or world-renowned resorts. Visit us today at 1714 Contra Costa in Sand City or on the World Wide Web at MontereyMattress.com. Sleep like a panda bear.
High temperatures in California have caused near-record demand for electricity across the state Wednesday. A Stage 1 emergency was called by the state's electric grid manager. That's the first of three steps before rolling blackouts occur to prevent a crash of the entire system. Phoenix has set a new record this year of 29 days of temperatures at 110 degrees or higher. The average number of days with temperatures that high is usually 10 a year. And Toys R Us is recalling 27,000 Chinese-made Imaginarium wooden coloring cases, which hold crayon and paint sets, because the boxes actually contain lead. Bagged spinach produced by a Central California produce company has been recalled after testing positive for salmonella. Metz Fresh distributed the spinach to stores and food service businesses in 48 states and Canada. The U.S. economy grew at a 4% rate in April to June quarter. According to the Commerce Department, that growth is higher than the initial government estimates. And Sony has introduced a video player version of its Sony Walkman. Gold is trading at $673.90 an ounce. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $73.36 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down 51 points at 13,238. The NASDAQ was up 2. The S&P down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6.5 minutes after the hour, email time. Everybody's emailing tonight. Nobody wants to talk. It's email time. I guess because I read them so pretty. You can't figure labor out? Say what? Bob, you're smarter than that. I know you are. Labor leadership is so damn far removed from working people, they don't know what time it is. Could be. Could be. You know, and it breaks my heart to talk like that, because to talk about things like that, because it was, you know, it was a good organized union job that made me able to grow up, have a decent education, a good home life, be able to go to the doctor when I was sick, go to college, pursue the knowledge and the learning that I wanted. And I'm not talking about the rank and file. The rank and file, no. The rank and file cash paychecks. The rank and file pay bills. They know what matters. They know. But maybe the emailer's right. Maybe it's the leadership. Maybe it's most assuredly the leadership. Because it's not... it's not the people who are out there earning the living and carrying the American economy on their backs. No. Well, just when you thought it was safe to go back into the salad aisle, don't eat the spinach. Agnes, don't eat the spinach. You know, one of our favorite dishes at one of the little restaurants that we favor around here, because, you know, we hate chain restaurants. We love to go to places where people are doing stuff because they love it, not because the bean counters at corporate have said, you know, the new tequila marinated chicken's going to be a real big hit. Press the chicken. Push the chicken. Push the bourbon steak. It comes with a little Mardi Gras pop-up hat. No. But one of our favorite dishes is a beautiful, beautiful spinach salad with a creamy gorgonzola dressing and sliced seedless red grapes and sunflower seeds and more crumbled gorgonzola over a bed of baby spinach leaves. Forget it. Nope. tough food safety precautions and produce tracking systems implemented last year after a fatal E. coli outbreak were put to the test when spinach from a produce company came up positive for salmonella bacteria, prompting a new recall. Mets Fresh LLC of King City, I assume that's King City, Washington, I don't know, issued the recall Wednesday after salmonella was found during a routine test of spinach it was processing for shipment. The recall involved 8,118 cases of spinach, but the company said more than 90% of that amount was identified before it reached stores. Oh, good. Only 10% of 8,118 cases. Let's see. What would that be? That would be 811 cases are still floating around loose in the American economy with creeping and crawling salmonella on it that you can't do anything about. You can wash till hell freezes over. Fewer than 1,000 cases, yeah, that would be 811, were distributed throughout the United States and Canada to be sold in retail and food service packages. No reports of illness yet. Don't eat the green beans. Don't eat the Castleberry's chili. Don't eat the spinach. Don't eat the hamburger. Don't drink the milk. Yeah, don't drink the bottled water. Looks like you're done. Jesus Christ. Testing and tracking are required by the California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement. Probably took them longer to write the law, write the name of the law, than to pass it. Testing and tracking are required by the California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement, which established food safety rules that all participating growers must follow. So maybe it's King City, California. I don't know. The agreement evolved. Oh, my God, it evolved. From last year's E. coli outbreak that killed 3 people and sickened 200. The California agriculture industry, which produces about 3/4 of the nation's lettuce and spinach, took a huge financial hit from the outbreak last September. Well, that's what it's really about, isn't it? It's about the financial hit, not about the 3 dead people and the 200 sick ones. And, of course, they're trying to put the best and most positive spin on this possible. The warning... The California agriculture... I think the test of the industry is how we react to these types of situations. No one was harmed by the product, and that's important. Oh, brother. Tough food safety precautions and produce tracking systems implemented last year, yada, 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 stopped it. Okay, we need more of those kinds of systems. We really, really do. I'm glad it appears to have worked to the extent that only 811 cases of this poisonous crap got out into the stream of commerce. However, it fails to identify the underlying problem. Why is there salmonella on the spinach? Why is there E. coli? The E. coli was actually... Salmonella's... you can kind of sort of understand that. But the E. coli... E. coli 157H7... That's the harder one to wrap your mind around, because E. coli 157H7 is something that lives in the bowel tract of animals. In other words, it only gets onto spinach when spinach comes in contact with poo. Yum, yum. I like my spinach with creamy gorgonzola dressing, not poo. But we have a... the shareholders must be taken into account. They've got to have their 1/4 of 1 penny per share profit every 3 months, whether they need it or not. And that is the center and the focus of the economy in Bushmerica. And 3 deaths and 200 grave illnesses, that's a price we're willing to pay for a vibrant and robust spinach economy. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I don't know. Gene Halloran is Director of Food Policy Initiatives at the Consumers Union, and she faulted the produce industry for resisting mandatory government regulations and instead enacting its own leafy green marketing agreement. You see, that's the trick. What was the name of that god-awful thing? The California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement? That ain't a law. That's one of those voluntary agreements dear leaders so fond of talking about. Doesn't have the force of law. Nobody can be convicted. Nobody can be put in jail. Nobody can be fined. I guess they just have to take the official California Leafy Green Products Handler Marketing Agreement seal of approval off the bag that nobody knows about in the first place. The California Department of Public Health and the Food and Drug Administration are investigating the Metz Fresh Processing Facility in King City. About 40,000 people per year get sick on salmonella. About 600 of those die. Yeah, so it's not just Bob prattling on about some funny story about icky stuff on spinach. This is, in a word, deadly serious. Don't eat the spinach. Don't eat the green beans. Don't drink the milk. Don't eat the hamburger. Don't eat the hot dog chili. Don't. Then again, if you grow it and you wash it and you get sick, it's your fault. But, you know, you're probably going to be pretty careful about growing it, aren't you? Jesus God. And I have no idea what this email is about. It's an AFA action alert. Bob, please do it for the children. Do it for the children. I knew the AFA was a pretty creepy bunch, but they want me to do it for the children. Do it for the children, Bob. Oh, wait. Obscenity laws. Without enforcement of our obscenity laws, our children have a dark future. Earlier, we asked our supporters to sign a petition asking each of the presidential candidates to enforce obscenity laws. Only 97,051 signed the pledge. You perverts! The American Family Association is proud to say that it reaches 1 million Christian homes, and only 97,000 signed the pledge. Well, then again, it's understandable, isn't it? The other... What? Let's see. 1 million minus 97,000. The other 903,000 were in the men's room somewhere doing river dance. In nearly every child sexual abuse case and in nearly every incident of adult sex crimes, pornography is involved. There, under both the Clinton and current Bush administrations, there has not been a single federal prosecution of a major distributor of obscenity. Not one. Well, did you ever wonder why, Brother Wildman? Because your damn membership is out there keeping them in business. There's study after study after study that shows that the biggest pornography problems are to be found among evangelical households. Sorry, just is. Reality spoken here, as the saying goes. Brother. Oh, and by this. I know. You caught the big terror story today. You probably did, I guess, about the vials of death that were found in New York City. I'm sure the right-wing hate radio is screaming that we have finally found Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. And they were, of course, at the United Nations. Told you about them United Nations. That's why we got the bumper sticker right next to the John Birch Society bumper sticker, the other one that says, get us out of the UN. But this one is the one that grabbed me. Because it speaks to the terrified nature of America. And of course, it also speaks to the entrepreneurial spirit. And that is that federal investigators are searching overseas in an attempt to identify suspects and evidence in a scam that's been running around the United States lately. I don't know how big it is. It's only netted about $13,000. But what happens is a caller uses a bomb threat to extort money from banks and stores. It's a CNN story. Banks and stores in at least 13 states have been hit by a scam where a caller claims there's a bomb on the premises that can be detonated if employees don't meet a demand to wire money to a specific account. There's a specific account and the cops can't... Oh my. Investigators are looking for a suspect in Portugal who appears to be linked to an account number the caller uses in his demands. The caller says, you know, don't hang up on me. This, I have a bomb. And, of course, all over America, people flip out when this happens. And who's to say? I'd probably be scared, too. But look where they're focusing their efforts. Maine. Republican senators. Yeah, Maine. Kind of a red state. Kansas! What's the matter with Kansas, Kansas? The caller ordered store employees and customers not only to wire the money, but to take off all their clothes. God, it reminds me of that thing that travels around the internet, the you know, you might be a redneck if, and it's the newspaper clipping that says, you know, Wanda Sue Longacre said that she prefers to shop at Bill's, and then there's a quote from her that says, well, you know, I like shopping at Bill's because it's not like I got to get all dressed up like I do when I go to Walmart. I can only imagine the naked people in this store in Kansas. Ooh, my eyes. Hannaford, Maine, Hannaford Grocery Store in Millinocket, Maine. One of the calls came in Wednesday. The person taking the call said the caller made it seem very realistic that they're right in the building or right outside, almost like they have a visual. Huh. How about that? Now, George Bush's administration is so busy out there trying to find, you know, Osama bin Laden's buddy using... we will talk today about the special hummus recipe. They're so busy listening for that crap that they can't hear a call coming in to Millinocket, Maine, saying, I got a bomb, and it's right over there in the frozen foods, and I need you to get all naked and wire me some money now. This would be funny if it weren't so damn tragic. About 38 shoppers and employees stayed in the store for at least 3 hours while police investigated the call. No word as to whether they had to take their clothes off. The police tried to trace the call, which originated from a cell phone. It was either national or international. Oh! That narrows it down. It was either national or international. At least they're absolutely positive it wasn't interplanetary. It was national or international? Oh, it was not a local cell phone company. Okay, I understand. The department in Maine and other local law enforcement agencies are working with the FBI. That's the part that's supposed to calm you down. The spate of scam calls started in Portland, Oregon on August 23rd. Okay, blue state. 3 days later, it gained speed. And one spokesman said, there's no link to terrorism. No, these are just entrepreneurs who are capitalizing on the fear that just washes over the American people day in and day out. Let's see, Maine, Oregon, Kansas, Arizona, California, Connecticut, Michigan, Missouri, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Texas, Utah, and Virginia stores have been cited or victimized. FBI spokesman Jeff Lanza said, we're looking at a foreign connection. I thought that, boy, I tell you what, I don't know which way this story takes me. On the one hand, I guess the right-wingers would say, see, they're not listening to all the calls. To which I would be tempted to respond, no, only the wrong ones. You know, I can imagine the phone call out there, you know, hello, this is Osama bin Laden, I'd like to order a pizza. And some boob, GS what the hell ever in the basement of the NSA goes, oh, he'd never use his own name. And besides, he don't like anchovies. They're listening to the wrong calls. Well, the gang that can't shoot straight strikes again, huh? Let's see, store called Dillon's in Kansas. Like I said, they were ordered to take off their clothes. 100 employees and shoppers? Oh, I shouldn't laugh. Lieutenant Paul Schofield of the Hutchinson, Kansas Police Department said that some of the people actually did take their clothes off. You gotta wonder. I mean, I'd never do it. They'd come and get me. You know, those stern, humorless guys in the dark suits and skinny black ties with the things in their ears. I'd never do it. But it makes you wonder if you call phone numbers of the businesses in Kansas and ask them if they've got Prince Albert in a can, if they'll actually engage. Let me go see. Is your refrigerator running? I'm looking for Richard Smoker. Could you page Richard Smoker? The caller to the Walmart in Newport, Rhode Island, demanded that $10,000 be wired to a location outside the U.S. The frightened employees did not send the full $10,000, just part of the $10,000, because it's Walmart. This can't happen in a country that isn't terrified. This can't happen in a country that hasn't been beaten over the head day in and day out with Osama's gonna get your Bible or some such. Yeah, it's King City, California with the spinach, by the way. This can't happen in a country that hasn't been reduced to a state of water-boweled, quivering fear. Can it? I don't think so. All right, let's go to the phones. Alan is calling. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how are you, Alan?
I'm doing pretty good. I called to tell you about this bumper sticker I saw the other day when I was in Birmingham.
Yeah.
It showed a Confederate flag, and then it said, "Fighting terrorism since 1861."
Oh, for heaven's sakes!
It was definitely about the dumbest bumper sticker I've about ever seen.
Well, you know, but you saw it where you'd expect to see it, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Now I do like the T-shirt that shows the Indians on horseback, and it says "Fighting terrorism since 1492," and that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I like to see that one.
They're out there.
I would say most of the people who were of the Confederacy are all wealthy people now at the South. You know how wealth stays in families?
Mm-hmm.
So these Bubbas, these poor Bubbas driving around with Confederate flags, their ancestry has nothing to do with it.
Oh, no, their ancestors were the same poor dirt farmers that didn't own slaves in the first place and went out and died for the slave owners.
Yeah, and the Klan was what was created to keep them down.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, you got to remember, Alan, your junior senator there from Alabama, Jeffrey Sessions.
Yeah, I called his office today.
Oh no, well, his middle name, never forget, his middle name is Beauregard.
Oh, I didn't know
kid
that.
You not, Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III.
When I heard about these Mexican truckers being going to start coming up here, it just made me so angry because I called two of my senators and my representative trying to stop this, and I don't think they did anything. It just went in one ear and out the other, and I'm just so angry about that.
Well, that's the problem with the undocumented worker situation that we have here. It's not driven by you or me. It's driven by corporate America that wants to maximize its profits because whatever you're getting per mile out there on the road, Alan, they can find somebody that'll take half for it.
Yeah, I just about lost my cool when I called Sessions' office today. I said, you folks, you don't represent us. You're just acting more like a leader than a representative. You just don't care about the working people, the people who work by the sweat of their brow. You're just only thinking of the wealthy people. You send jobs overseas. You let other people do our high tech jobs, and there's no regard for the working man. She acts like she agreed, but I doubt it.
Well, and there's not, and you know, there's only, and you know, I hate to just hammer on something. But there's only one candidate running for president right now who says with beyond any shadow of a doubt that he will get us out of NAFTA, will get us out of GATT, and get us out of the WTO. Just one candidate.
Yeah, that's Dennis Kucinich. I would like to see Dennis Kucinich and maybe Edwards running as vice president. Have them two running on the same ticket. What would you think about that?
That wouldn't be a bad idea. I don't know if Edwards would take it since he had to play second fiddle in 2004. But you know, I think it's abundantly clear that you know, we've got to have some kind of relief, and it's not going to come from some bill that builds a fence around America. It's going to come from real reform that punishes employers who employ undocumented people and pay them. And pay them slave wages and treat them like garbage.
Yeah, they're giving away the jobs that our ancestors worked for, created.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I went to the mailbox today, and the paintings for the giveaway were there, and they are beautiful, Alan. They are just beautiful.
Great. I'm glad you like them. Maybe you could have like two drawings. That's why I sent two.
Yeah.
Just in case.
And that's what I think we'll do. You do exquisite work, my friend. You truly do.
Thank you. I need to get away from this trucking and do more of that.
It'd be nice just to be able to pursue your art, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they say one of the things to pursue happiness is to do more of what you like to do and less of what you don't like to do. So I wouldn't say I don't like driving the truck, but I like painting better.
Yeah.
So I just need to do more painting.
Well, I'm sure you do fine behind the wheel of the truck, but I tell you what, it's obvious that you do great work behind the easel.
Well, thank you.
Alan, it's always good talking to you, my friend. Stay in touch, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, bye now. Forgot to find out where Alan was on the road tonight. But, yeah, I should tell you that for everyone who has donated since we began the funding drive, your name will go into the hat, and we'll pull that on September the 1st. And most of you have used PayPal or you've mailed something, so we've got a mailing address, and we'll send Alan's painting to you because this is exquisite. It's just gorgeous. It'll blow you away when you see it. Now, I'll try to take a picture of it or something when John Fox gets back, and hopefully we'll get a photograph of it up on the webpage at headonradionetwork.com. I'd like to do that. Let's talk to Jim now. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Pretty good. You know, I've listened to what you said, and if I were to attempt to address everything piecemeal, well, it would just be too time-consuming. But, you know, my question is simply this. What does all of what has been said on this program tonight tell you about the condition of this country and the mindset of the people who live in it?
It tells me that we are in desperate straits, and no one dares to say it, Jim.
I mean, it's just like that there are certain elements that are trying to foster a climate of fear and mistrust, and the point that people are almost afraid to speak to one another in the street anymore.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, I personally try to remedy some of that. I talk to strangers. I guess I'm weird that way.
I mean, they've hit it from all aspects. I mean, either from economics or religion or whatever. And, you know, and about those things, this particular religion, I've always tried to keep an open mind. You know that.
Yeah.
And we've always agreed to disagree. But
the rove tactics of dividing the American people were pervasive, Jim. It wasn't just political division. It was religious division. It was economic division. Any place where Americans could come together, we have been deliberately divided.
Yeah, I know. You know, the other night, Sunday night at 11 o'clock, I happened to catch the Hal Lindsey report.
Oh, dear God.
Well, you know, I find him interesting to listen to. You know, I listen to anybody. You know, I try.
Yeah,
like
sure.
And
but he's been recycling the same shtick for 40 years now,
I know,
Jim.
I know it. And also, you know, he's wanting to support him. You know, I guess that's his own interpretation. Since the late great Planet Earth, I guess he's made that's the way he makes his living, right?
Well, it is. And you know, first it was the late great Planet Earth, and I forget who the Antichrist was in that version, but I'm looking here at one of his books right now, The 1980s, Countdown to Armageddon. And we weren't going to get past 1989, Jim. And nobody ever calls him on it.
Well, you know, the only thing I can say to that sort of behavior and talk is that it's what Saint Augustine once said. He said, if you're looking for the Antichrist, look for him within yourself.
Yeah. And of course there are other places in the New Testament. I think it's in the book, one of the three Peter books, the three Peter letters, where it says antichrists, plural, making it clear that you know it's not one person. It's false prophets and false teachers and people who will take you the wrong way away from the you know the basic message. However it was that they understood that basic message,
and do so with the mechanism of fear.
Yeah.
That's what gives me cause for great concern.
Because, you know, if heaven is the carrot and hell is the stick, they're a lot more fond of using the stick than the carrot.
It would appear so in most cases, that's for sure. You know, you don't hear a whole lot about the love and redemption. All you hear about is the punishment and the condemnation.
Well, I remember Bishop Carlton Pearson saying that they've made an entire industry out of selling tickets to get out of heaven and into hell.
Well, John Tesla did quite a job of that back in the 16th century when he sold indulgences. So there it is.
Yeah, it's not like it's anything new.
Well, at least they did get a beautiful church out of it. That's about all I can say.
That's true. That's true.
St. Peter's was built with the sale of those indulgences.
You're right.
It's the same old story, the fight for love and glory. It's the pantomime game. Lyrics straight from Brian Ferry.
That's right. That's right. With a little help from, I forget who wrote As Time Goes By.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't have much else to say, and I hope y'all have a good evening. And
Well, you too.
You take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you very much, Jim. You have good a good night. Evening yourself. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye now. Which reminds me, I should go ahead and announce again, tonight's Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold will be a rerun because Peter's a bit under the weather. And his guest scheduled for this evening, Ernest Cole, will reschedule his appearance in the near future as soon as Peter gets back up to speed and his throat gets healthy and happy and healed again. So we apologize for the delay, but you will get you're gonna be blown away by Ernest Cole. Okay, you just are. Because when Peter tells us who his guests are going to be, I go and check out who the guest is, what they do. Amazing good stuff. 20 minutes before the hour. Let's see. Just to clear out the file cabinet this evening as we because you know tomorrow evening will be of course the third incarnation of the front porch here at the Horn when we bring multiple callers on at the same time, sit on the front porch and cuss and discuss and have a good old fashioned upcountry conversation. So I'm going to clear some stuff away. Let's see. Former member of the... Wait. What do you call a group of singers who eat only fresh fruit and drink diet soda? What do you call a group of very, very unintelligent singers who drink only diet soda and eat only fresh fruit? There we go. I got it right this time. The Moron Tab and Apple Choir. Ba-dum-bum. I got a million of them. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. A member of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir faces up to 10 years in federal prison after pleading guilty this past Monday to a charge of possessing child pornography. Robert Matthews, 52, of Orem, Utah, appeared in U.S. District Court to admit he possessed images of child pornography that were sent over the internets. His plea comes as part of a plea bargain struck with federal prosecutors. This is from the Deseret Morning News. Prosecutors in Utah, of course, say they will recommend the lower end of the federal sentencing guidelines for Matthews' acceptance of responsibility in the case, and that they will not put him away for the rest of his natural-born life. Felony counts of sexual exploitation of a minor were also charged. 3 counts of lewdness involving a child. The state charges were dismissed in lieu of the federal case. According to police, Matthews was arrested September 28, 2006, after they received evidence that he swam naked with 4 young boys during a trip to Diamond Fork Hot Springs in July of that year. And while on the trip, Matthews took pictures of the nude swim and later processed the images on his computer. He had joined the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in January 2006. After they learned of his arrest, he was released from the choir. Ah, okay. See, this isn't the case of some guy who's sitting there, you know, typing with one hand and downloading kiddie porn images from somewhere else and looking at them and, you know, violating the law that way. No, this is an upstanding member of the church who actually produced the images, who took teenage boys on a camping trip and then induced them to remove their clothing, removed his own, and went a skinny dipping with them, and then got out the camera and started taking pictures. Oh, glory. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Anybody want to guess how Robert Matthews votes? Do I have to do this again? Do I have to call out to Orem, Utah? and chase down his voter registration and come back and tell you that every time the door opens, he runs out and he votes Republican? Do I have to do that again, or can we just take it as read? That every time you see one of these sick sons of bitches that's out there preying on little boys or little girls, every time they will be a devout, devoted member of the Republican Party. When he's sentenced, Matthews also faces being placed on federal supervised release for the rest of his life. Oh, okay. Faces up to 10 years, but he will get the lower end of the federal sentencing guidelines because he didn't make the prosecutors go to the trouble of showing the little pictures to the jury. You know, I gotta wonder if that 10-year sentence is less in the first place than the state charges of sexual exploitation of a minor and lewdness involving a child. I gotta wonder. I can't help it. Because this is, after all, Orrin Hatch's Utah. Lord. Does this just make you feel as icky as it does me? They're in the... And look, I mean... It's a public restroom. It's a swimming hole. Oh, God. Is there anywhere... Is there anywhere that you can take your family? And I mean, we there's a public swimming pool over at the 4-H campgrounds where we live here. And I thought, you know, we took the kids swimming. It's about the cheapest thing you can do and give them an enjoyable Saturday afternoon in the summertime. And I took my camera with me, thinking, you know, I'd take some pictures of the kids, Agnes and me, sitting there on the side of the pool watching the kids frolic and play. I'd take some pictures of our children for the, you know, send to the family and, you know, put in the scrapbook, that kind of thing. But you see, there's a sign on the wall as you check in and pay your little fee to go swimming that says, no cameras, no camera cell phones, no video cameras, no nothing are allowed on these premises. So a fun little family outing to the swimming pool when the boy first works up the guts to do a backwards flip off the diving board. You can't catch that moment with your camera now or your video camera. And, you know, who thinks in wildly different terms. I said, well, you know, I understand why you don't want to. You know, those are electronic devices. They could get dropped in the pool. It could be a health hazard. No, sir. That's not why. We've caught people videoing the kids who weren't their friends and weren't their parents, basically stalking them with cameras. So I can't take pictures of my own children. And I'm not mad about it. I understand it. But Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. You know, because of fine, upstanding church members like Robert Matthews, I can't take a picture of my kids. God Almighty. Jim's back with us. Yeah, Jim.
Hey, Bob. Thanks. Listen, I meant to tell you this earlier, but my mind was on 10,000 other things today. But, you know, I can say this in one sentence. When these people say, let us pray,
mm-hmm.
How are they spelling the word pray? P-R-A-Y or P-R-E-Y?
Well, in the case of this character, I'm sure it's P-R-E-Y. You're absolutely right.
And, you know, I think that's probably the most succinct way to put a lot of the stuff we've been talking about tonight, you know?
Yeah, and because the guys, you know, they had him dead to rights, so he owned up to it, and they're gonna cut him a break on his sentence for that.
And this guy was convicted of what, molesting a child?
Well, no, he was the kiddie porn.
Oh Jesus!
He enticed four youngsters, four little boys, to take their clothes off during a skinny dip, and proceeded to photograph them.
How old are these boys?
Early teenagers, 13-ish.
Well, I just cannot understand or relate to that sort of thing. I really can't. I'm sorry. You know, it's just, I mean, what in the world is alluring about something like that when a child who isn't even mature to sexually develop, or not that there's any excuse for any of the stuff, but I mean, you know, the pornography industry, I guess, with people who are old enough to do what they have to do for the camera, but Lord, this kiddie porn and stuff like that's just sick.
Well, see, and I think I could be wrong, Jim, but the psychologist and the psychiatrist will tell you that this is not a sexual thing. That it's not about sex. It is about power, and it is a crime of violence, and not a crime of sex. It's about
a crime of destruction of a human psyche.
Precisely.
And who in the hell would want to have that kind of power over another human being? I don't understand that power trip. I just don't.
There's a lot of them out there. Every time, I mean, every time I turn around, Jim, there's another story of some evangelical or some uber right-wing religion industry type who's been caught with a computer full of kiddie porn, or diddling kids, or raping teenage girls. You know, this country is filthy with it. And like I said, without fail, when I track these cases down, when I track them down and find, you know, without fail, they are members and devout voters on the Republican ticket.
Yeah, you're right. I just wish they could, you know, subscribe to the old adage of what Hank Williams once said, just mind your own business. And, you know, if you have power over yourself and exercise that power judiciously, I think you've done quite enough without trying to exercise that kind of power over another human being. I really do.
But these people, Jim, they are powerless in their own lives. And by...
So it's a sense of projection with them.
I think we probably got the vocabulary pretty close to right on that.
Or transference.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you again for taking my call.
No trouble at all, Jim. No trouble at all. Thank you.
Bye.
It's a busted society. You know, these right-wing idiots, them liberals, they ain't never got nothing fun to say. How positive am I supposed to be about not being able to photograph my children at a pool because predatory Republicans have already spoiled the apple barrel for everybody else? And yet the Republicans will say that the right-wing hate talkers, the Bortzes, the Becks, the Hannitys, the O'Reillys, the Flimballs, that's the fault of the liberals. The fault of the liberals. So I guess it's our fault for the fact that Republicans and right-wing religion industry people are predators. I can't quite work the math on that, but I guess that's how it's supposed to work. Jiminy. Oh, and by the way, federal and state health officials have issued a consumer alert today after 9 people were sickened by contaminated beef. A day before the start of what is historically a popular weekend for grilling, that's the Labor Day weekend, officials urged consumers to check the beef in their freezers and make sure it doesn't include possibly tainted meat. The 41,205 pounds, 20 tons of beef, identify as possibly tainted. It's no longer on store shelves because the sell-by dates have already expired, but it might be in your freezer. 9 people have been sickened, 6 in Washington, 2 in Oregon, 1 in Idaho. And it is contaminated with E. coli 157H7, which we discussed can only contaminate meat when meat comes in contact with feces. The suspect products are 16-ounce packages of Northwest Finest 7% fat natural ground beef. The UPC code label is 752907. Jot this down. 752907-600127. It's also 16-ounce packages of Northwest Finest 10% fat organic ground beef. Ha! Huh, how about that? Corporate America's gotten its hooks into the organic trade, too. What is organic ground beef doing being exposed to fecal material? Well, could it be that there's a lot of fraud involved in the organic trade? See, these cattle stand up to their hip bones in feces on you know, giant multi-hundred acre feedlots in Kansas and Nebraska. And that's how the meat gets tainted. And they're fed organic food on the feedlot. They're fed organic corn, which they're not supposed to eat in the first place. And they stand in their own... Oh, God. Northwest Finest 10% fat organic ground beef. The expiration dates are between August 1 and August 8th. It was sold in Safeway stores, QFCs, and Fred Meyer, as well as other stores. God Almighty. What was the name of that? Wasn't there an old player that said, "Don't drink the water"? It used to be funny. It ain't funny anymore. So that's it tonight. Thanks for stopping by. I hope you'll join us for the front porch tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. We really do appreciate having you around and your input, your emails, your phone calls, your chat room. Even just knowing you're screaming at the speakers makes it all worthwhile. We do appreciate it. We're almost at the end of August. We are a good $600 away from our $2,000 monthly goal. If you haven't yet supported the Horn, I encourage you to please do so, because we got to start all over again on September 1. Thanks, Agnes, for producing. Welcome home, Ben Birch. Glad you enjoyed your vacation. John Fox, hope you're still enjoying yours. Get well, Peter Godbold. And thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network started and thereby are helping us to this day in our attempt to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Tina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. 6 to 8 vials of chemical warfare agent phosgene were discovered at a United Nations office in New York this morning, prompting evacuation of the building, which is adjacent to UN headquarters. The vials had been retrieved in Iraq during a chemical and biological weapons inspection back in 1996 and were mistakenly stored in the office. The use of phosgene as a chemical weapon dates back to World War I. The Taliban has freed the last 3 South Korean hostages in Afghanistan. The church workers were handed over to Red Cross officials today. They were the remainder of the group of 23 who were ambushed on July 19th. The Taliban executed 2 of them. The Afghan Defense Ministry reports that in a southern province, a wanted Taliban insurgent leader was killed in a U.S.-led raid. Taliban leaders say that they've captured 300 Pakistani soldiers near the Afghanistan border. Officials say that more than 100 Army soldiers are missing. Violence in the region has increased since July, when government troops stormed a mosque to root out Islamist extremists. The Shia group Hezbollah has launched a new video game where Israel is the enemy. The game's designer says its intention is to create a culture of resistance to younger generations. In it, players assume the role of Hezbollah fighters that capture Israeli soldiers and then fire missiles at tanks, helicopters, and gunboats. The United Nations Nuclear Agency says that Iran is expanding its uranium enrichment program but is producing less nuclear fuel. U.S. officials insist that Iran's nuclear program is for the production of nuclear weapons, not for civilian purposes. A panel released its investigation report today on the Virginia Tech massacre, in which 31 people were murdered by a student gunman. It found that if the university had responded faster to warn students that the killer was on the loose, lives would have been saved. Senator Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign will give $23,000 to charity. The money came from a donor who has an arrest warrant for fraud. Fellow Republicans are further isolated.